Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
We bring in Mark Rogenrich, FanNation at SI.com. Welcome back, Mark. Great to have you with us.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks so much for having me again.
I brought this up with other reporters, but if I just gave you the stat sheet from Saturday, like, whoa, hey, all right, I did pretty well. It was almost like the stat sheet didn't at times match up with the visuals. What did you think?
Oh, you mean because they won every stat known to man and didn't cover, essentially, which is now, I guess, what we really care about.
Right, exactly,
That makes some sense, because visually it had a – not that it was off or anything. There was just moments, I would say maybe 10 or 12 minutes that second quarter that they kind of went awry. The way I kind of looked at it too, though, is each of the first three games all had some real measurable impact for the team. I mean, game one, obviously, your Purdue night game, Big Ten opener. Game two is your home opener. So a lot of guys still had played at Beaver Stadium. That was the first time. Game three, you're playing the SEC road team. Is it natural then, maybe not to expect, at least understand, though, that game four, you know, is, okay, now you played at home, you're playing another home game against the MAC team, that maybe the eye can wander a little bit and you get unfocused or you disengage or you pull out the gas or something like that? It's not certainly something a coach or coaching staff is going to want to hear, and it's something they're definitely going to want to rectify, but I guess in some ways it might have been understandable.
Well, I think across the country, game four was like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Kent State, right?
Kent State, Oregon State, USC, Texas Tech, Texas, Kansas State, Oklahoma. I mean, it just kind of played out that way the entire weekend in week four. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I thought.
And it still ultimately was a 3-touchdown win.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a thing when you can – when you can dive into something, I mean, you can be critical about situations in a 3-touchdown win. You are all for it, I guess, as a coach, and should be as a fan, I think, anyway.
Well, it depends on how much money you put down on the game, I guess. You can't discount that these days. The other one, too, is Middle Tennessee beating Miami. You asked about Drew Aller today and the placement of, you know, when to use him in the process. What did you think of the answer?
James, one thing is brought up. I don't think he definitely does not want to get into any sort of Michigan 2021 conversation in how Michigan used McNamara and McCarthy last year.
I don't think
he wants to draw that in any way, shape, or form. He wants no parallels to that. He also might not want to give away any sort of strategic insight. But when you ask, I think occasionally now when we ask about Drew, he brings it back to a broader conversation about competition at every position.
Sure.
Especially the positions where they are very competitive. Guard, middle linebacker, other, you know, kickoffs, things like that.
Yeah.
I found it, you know, and there was a follow-up question about Drew as well. And I just, you know, find it interesting that, you know, the arc of Drew's time at Penn State, and it seems like they're very, very high on him and also feel that they're also in this kind of luxury spot almost, and that they can play him behind a fourth-year starter. So because James mentioned it, in 2022, you have to play guys and think about that, and the unspoken, I think the silent E at the end of that word was obviously the transfer portal in NIL, and then primarily transfer portal. He said it without saying it. But then it also, like I said, it seems like they're in a pretty good position that if your true freshman becomes your number two quarterback in training camp, then it stands to reason that if he continues to rise and lift his floor, because everybody loves ceilings and floors, and with a freshman, when you compare like a freshman to a senior, floor is probably more important than ceiling when you're playing in a season, but over the course of a lifetime, the ceiling maybe is. But if he could continue raising that, there's really no doubt that he's going to be in obvious contention to start next year, or at least be the leading candidate for that. So are you is he in a position where they think that they're worried about the portal or anything else like that with Drew? I don't think they are. So I think they seem maybe a little more confident in the position they are, at least roster-wise, with where they're at a quarterback. Because, again, like at Michigan, they're not going to have this same situation next year. It's going to be completely different.
And I maintained at Michigan many, many times in the past year that the reason McCarthy plays, they didn't want him to transfer. I mean, I've maintained that. Yeah. I mean, now, I'm not saying anybody there told me that. That's just me making an assumption.
Yeah, and that's a very different situation than Penn State.
Yes.
Like I say, I think they have much less reason to believe that that would be a possibility.
Then there's the two running backs. Nicholas Singleton put together a 179 followed by a 124. And then on a day where, okay, they may have him figured out on this particular day or they play it really well, they got Catron Allen. What does that tell you about the depth and the balance they have in the backfield?
That it's really imposing to be have to scale your defense against a guy who can get hot. You know, in some ways they have some similarities, but they're still different kinds of backs stylistically, run-wise, that you really have to scale your defense to both of these players because you never know really when one is going to take over a game or be called in to take over a game or at least to take over a series or something like that. They are really, I think they're proving to be a really uniquely formidable duo. One thing I think that James Franklin said maybe a week or two ago that I found really interesting was that Catron Allen played at IMG, and he was kind of a rarity of being a multi-year player at IMG. That I don't think that's – I mean, a lot of the guys, I think, go there, and they're, you know, that's kind of the nature of IMG. In football, you get a 1, maybe 2 years. You're not spending 4 years for the most part playing at IMG. That's kind of a transfer spot to go and finish your career. And he was not going to be, and he knew it. He really, you know, in a place like that, it's hard to be the best player on the football field. So he learned to share carries, and he learned that he wasn't that guy. Whereas, you know, Nicholas Singleton just was, you know, a Governor Mifflin. He just was the best player on the football field. So that informs the way you work. It informs the way you train. It informs Charlie, gives you perspective on coming into a season. Saying, I know I can, I understand that I can share carries with Singleton. We can do it. I know I'm going to get my opportunity because when I get out there, I'm going to show what I can do. He has the vision thing has come up like so many times, but I think the stat that really strikes me is 36 carries, no yards lost. And right. That is a dependable back. And you know, neither one of them, of course, you know, was fumbled yet too. But 36 and zero. That's dependability, and that is going to keep you on the field.
Here's another stat, and it's, I think it's pretty close. I mean, but at least in the neighborhood, Penn State's a plus 584 yards on field position. That's 146 yards a game. Mm-hmm. When you look at the job, and now some of that's takeaways. I mean, that happens. That's what happens when you're a +8 giveaway takeaway. But obviously another part of that's the punting part of it. Your thoughts on that and what that has meant to Penn State's early success?
Barney Moore is my favorite story on the team right now. Talked to him after the game a little bit, and then today he had a conference call. And I think, what was it mentioned today that, is it like 10 punts or something inside the 10?
Yeah, he has half of them.
Half of his punts are inside the 10. And that could be one more because which game they kind of run together. But he had a punt that should have been down at the 1. It kind of got
Purdue.
Bounced in the end. Yeah, bounced in the end zone for a touchback.
It's Purdue.
He's a field flip weapon. So when you're at, which is one of the surprising things at Auburn, when they went for it right away, mm-hmm. You know, on fourth and a longish one at midfield, when you're playing in that situation, I thought they have a field flipping weapon that they didn't use at that point. I guess I kind of got it, but in the moment, I thought this seems to be a good place to do that, to take that and let your defense turn it over. Barney has been, to me, you know, looking from the outside, again, not seeing practice full-time and seeing how he's done, especially not seeing it last year and the way he's punted. The story of this team, one of the main stories of this team, because you lost somebody in Jordan Stout that you're replacing with basically four players this year,
yes,
with like two kickers, a place kicker, and a punter. So that has to be just confounding in the way you're going to work that. And Jordan was the two things which is great at, punting and then putting kickoffs in the end zone. And you've seen that with kickoffs. They've been a little bit erratic, but Barney's picked right up on that, especially for a player who, when he punted against Purdue, the first time he punted in almost 3 years. Last time he had punted was 2019. And that was when he was punting for Colgate against Lafayette. There is in no way that almost 3 years worth of punts, that the difference between punting from, with Colgate against Lafayette to go to punting in a Big Ten night game. For him to be able to make that jump, not even really a jump, because for him it was just kind of a methodic climb to where he was, to not having a 20 season, to still training, to transferring, to sitting behind Jordan Stafford, the whole thing. I guess the jump's totally the wrong word there, and that he made that methodical step-by-step-by-step move to turn himself into really one of the better punters in the Big Ten and potentially in the country.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thanks so much for your time, your insight, great work from FanNation@SI.com.
Yeah, appreciate it so much, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.